The U.S. government's outstanding debt is projected to reach its statutory limit, its debt ceiling, as of tomorrow. It's according to a letter that Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen sent to Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy last week. If Congress doesn't increase the debt limit, the U.S. could default on the debt, which could have a lot of serious consequences here in the U.S. and around the world. The way things work, Congress has a few months to deal with it. Will they? Republican Wisconsin Representative Mike Gallagher from the state's 8th Congressional District was on WPR's The Morning Show earlier today.
Letting it default would have a bad impact on our credibility globally. It would have a negative economic impact. So that's certainly not an outcome anybody wants to see. But it requires both sides to come to the table in good faith, right?
We're looking at the debt ceiling, the politics surrounding it, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Basics, do you have questions about the national debt, about the debt ceiling and how it works, why it exists in the first place? We'll get into that. And do you think Republicans should use this debt ceiling increase as leverage for particular funding cuts, policy changes, you name it? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Stephen Smith is the Kate M. Gregg Distinguished Professor of Social Sciences and Professor of Political Science at Washington University. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be with you.
Can you explain this debt ceiling concept? What is it? Why is it there?
The debt is, of course, the accumulated borrowing that the federal government is engaged in. There's a limit under federal law on the total amount of borrowing that the federal government has outstanding. This is acquired because in any given year, in recent decades, almost every year, Congress has put in place spending and revenue policies that lead to a deficit. That is, we spend more than we bring in taxes and other forms of revenue, creating a deficit, and that adds each year to the total debt. It's that total debt that has a ceiling. And because Congress has put in place policies that create an annual deficit and the debt keeps rising, we bump up against that debt limit every so often. The current debt limit of about $31.4 trillion was put in place in late 2021, and we're now bumping up against that limit.
And just to clarify, this debt ceiling, when we increase the limit, we're not saying we are now spending more money. It's we're paying off the money and the debts that we've already accumulated. Do I have that right?
That's exactly right. Each year, Congress passes some annual bills that affect spending and also has in place some longer term policies on spending and on taxation, so that each year that combination of spending and revenue policies produces a deficit, or in theory, a surplus. But when it's a deficit, it adds to the debt. We usually have a debt, and that means, a deficit, and so that means the debt keeps increasing. And it does mean that Congress has to increase the debt limit on a regular basis. Of course, they could take another strategy. They could get rid of the debt limit and just live with the spending and revenue policies. But over the decades, they've chosen to keep a debt limit in place.
What is the or what? If Congress doesn't agree to bump up the debt ceiling and eventually we stop being able to pay these debts, we haven't experimented with this before. What are the thoughts as to what happens next?
Well, most economists think that the consequences are really very, very serious. Effectively, the Treasury Department could no longer borrow money to cover government obligations. And we usually call that simply a default, failing to pay off your credit card on time. And those who hold the debt, bondholders, or people who expect the government to pay them, many vendors, government employees, including military employees, they might find themselves in a very bad circumstance because the Treasury Department cannot live up to its obligations to them. If the Treasury Department can no longer borrow, then it's going to have to take some fairly drastic steps. And that's where things get a little iffy. We've never really truly tested this. In 2011, there was a threatened breach of the debt limit, threatened default, and that was enough to cause a plunge in stock prices, an increase in interest rates, a downgrading of the federal government's credit rating, a sharp spike in mortgage interest rates, and it created big losses. It made interest rates go up. It meant funding the existing debt even more expensive, and it greatly harmed the economy. There are various estimates on this, but it surely cost the economy over the next 10 years a couple of percentage points in productivity.
Talking to Steve Smith from Washington University, looking at the debt ceiling. The clock starts in effect tomorrow. We hit that debt ceiling. There's some wiggle room, the Treasury Department says. Probably by June, though, something has to give. Should it? You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you agree that Republicans should use their leverage over the debt ceiling to get some changes in the way the federal government spends money? If so, what would you like to change? Or is there another time and place to have this debate? Call in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Steve, let's turn to the politics now surrounding the debt ceiling. It seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, there weren't really politics. This is just something that Congress did. Then they'd fight about appropriations bills. When did this start being seen as a tool to get concessions?
Well, it's long been somewhat difficult to increase the debt limit. Members of Congress really don't like to be voting in favor of what might appear to be an endorsement of even more debt on the part of the federal government. But in the last 15 years or so, a group of Republicans, the most conservative Republicans primarily, have decided that opposing an increase in the debt made political sense for them. Some of them made their support for an increase in the debt limit conditional on big changes in federal spending. In 2011, that led to a bit of a crisis because there was an impasse between the Obama administration, of course, the Democrats, and the Republican Congress. Even the threat of default really created some substantial harm to the economy and cost the federal government hundreds of thousands of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars over the course of the next year or two. So it's considered to be very, very serious. But today's kind of radical Republicans say that a default is worth taking a risk on, that we really must make deep, deep cuts in federal programs. And the only way to get a Democratic Senate and a Democratic president to agree to that is to threaten Armageddon, that is, threaten default. And so they're urging their leadership to go to the mat on this, to go farther than Republicans did in 2011, not to give in eventually. And this is going to create some turmoil among House Republicans, who at this very moment must be discussing their options and trying to come up with proposals that would allow the party to rally behind some strategy in dealing with the Democrats.
Now we see, as you mentioned, Republicans in the House, some of them saying, let's do this debt ceiling thing, get this leverage. The White House, the Biden administration so far saying, this is not really a negotiable thing. If we have to pay our debts, we have to increase the debt ceiling. Now is not the time. I mean, do you see either of those arguments giving? Do you see a prospect for actual negotiations on this?
Well, there is room for negotiation, but it's not obvious who's going to give or give first or take the first step toward meaningful discussions. It might take someone like Senator Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Senate Republicans, to serve as a go-between between the Democratic president and the House Republicans to try to find some ground for a compromise. There are many, many ways in which they could compromise. They could find a set of budget agreements, some say caps on federal spending that are modest enough to gain the support of at least some Democrats and maybe the White House. They could simply suspend the debt limit. There's nothing that says there has to be one. They could simply pass legislation to suspend it, maybe just temporarily, while they're considering spending and tax bills this year. So there are all kinds of ways to come up with a compromise on fiscal policy. But in the end, you still need a majority in both the House and the Senate in order to avoid default. And it's not obvious yet who's going to even make the first move, let alone what the outcome will be.
We're talking about the national debt limit, the debt ceiling you may be seeing in the headlines, which Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says the U.S. is projected to reach tomorrow. We've got some months of wiggle room thanks to some funky accounting. Steve Smith is with us, professor of political science at Washington University. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the House Republican side of things? Many House Republicans saying, yes, let's not increase this debt ceiling limit unless we can get some spending concessions out of the White House. Good idea, bad idea? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Steve Smith, professor of political science at Washington University, looking at the politics and policy around Congress and the national debt limit to prevent the U.S. from defaulting on its financial obligations. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions about the debt ceiling, the national debt, federal spending. 800-642-1234 is the number. Doug joins us now in Colfax. Doug, hi.
Hi, I have a question about percent of GDP of our national debt. Is it really much greater than it has been in the past, or is it, and therefore, is it a real significant problem for the functioning of our federal government, or is it more of a political point-making issue?
Doug, thanks a lot for that call. Steve, the debt number itself, really big as a percentage of GDP. Doug suggesting maybe not that bad. A lot of economists and others have this argument all the time. What are your thoughts?
Well, Doug, it has been creeping up. It's been creeping up, not quite monotonically, that is year by year, since about 1980. That was the... In the 1970s, we were down to a national debt that was roughly 30% of our gross domestic product. And we're now over 100%, and it promises to go up to maybe 130 or 140 in the next decade. So it is creeping up as a percent of our gross domestic product. Some people use that as a kind of a measure of our capacity to carry the debt. Now, obviously, people with a larger income can carry a larger debt. But if the percentage of that of their income that is held in debt or is they owe, it becomes more and more of a problem. So there's no doubt that we have committed to a variety of forms of government spending. A combination of defense and social programs that has increased our national debt. And members of Congress who don't want to increase taxes to cover those costs then necessarily generate an annual deficit, which keeps the debt creeping upward. So it is true that we've experienced now about a generation of an increasing federal debt as a percent of gross domestic product.
Doug, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. I want to give another listen to Representative Mike Gallagher, a Republican from Wisconsin, speaking this morning on The Morning Show. Some of what he hopes comes out of this showdown.
What I would prefer to see is pairing a debt ceiling increase with something called the Trust Act. That's a bill I have. It's bipartisan in the Senate. It would basically set up a series of rescue task forces for all the trust funds that are going insolvent. I'd also be in favor of a reform to the process so we do budgeting on a biannual basis. My predecessor, Reid Ribble, led the charge on that. That would just make it so much easier to get budgeting done in a sensible, sober manner. The other thing I'd be in favor of is something called the No Budget, No Pay Act, which basically says if we don't pass budgets on time, if we don't do our basic blocking and tackling of doing 12 separate appropriations bills, we, as members of Congress, don't get paid.
I want to tackle that middle part there, Steve. Regularly scheduled biannual budgeting, and as opposed to this sort of what seems like an ad hoc system we've had for some years now. What do you think of that?
Well, there are many budget experts who think it's a bit of a gimmick, and yet others who think it's a fundamental reform that could help us a lot. Right now, the federal government operates on an annual budget. The federal fiscal year runs from October 1 to September 30. So every fall, we face a bit of a crisis about getting our spending bills and tax policies in place. And by moving to a two-year cycle, biannual budget, you can cut the crises in half. And but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to eliminate crises altogether. It just means that you have more time to prepare for the start of the next cycle, and politics can settle down a little bit for a two-year period. Many think that that's good for federal planning. Agencies will know what their budget is for a two-year period rather than a one-year period. And of course, the way the current system is working, we frequently don't get the spending bills passed until long after October 1, the date that the spending bills are supposed to be in place. This past year, they weren't in place until the beginning of March, many months later. And so really, the agencies only had a half a year of certainty about what their budget is going to be. But of course, it might help settle down fiscal politics a little bit, but it doesn't eliminate the need to worry about a debt limit. So it could be something that's added to a large package that includes a debt limit increase to make the whole package more attractive to some members of Congress, but it's no substitute for addressing the debt limit itself.
Talking to Steve Smith from Washington University about the debt ceiling and the national debt and the politics surrounding it all. Back to your calls now. Lisa is with us in Milwaukee. Lisa, hello. Are you there, Lisa?
It's Linda.
I'm sorry, Linda. We had a typo. Yeah.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. I get very concerned that this is a ploy by certain members of Congress to trying to, you know, the debt limit to really start cutting into Social Security, Medicare, and Medicare. I'd like to hear your guests' comments on this, please.
Lisa, thanks for the call. If we had that debt ceiling drop, yeah, Steve, the impact on those programs.
Well, there were very conservative Republicans who are demanding that the Republican Party in Congress and the House go to the mat on extracting concessions from the Democrats as a condition for passing a debt limit increase. They're quite open about their hope to radically change the federal government's major mandatory programs. These are programs where the law states that you're due certain benefits if you meet certain conditions, like age. So Medicare, Social Security, or income requirements that make you eligible for Medicaid, the large federal health program. And they're not shy about saying that they want major deep cuts in these programs. Moreover, they will be quite open about wanting to fundamentally change the role of the federal government in American life, reducing its role very substantially and the tax burden that comes with it. So there's no doubt that that's their intention. It's not a hidden strategy. They're quite out in the open about this. Now, maybe a generation ago, decades ago, they would have been more quietly advocating these changes. But today's far right in the House Republican Party is very open about their hope to radically change those major federal social programs.
Lisa, thanks for that call. Time for one more caller with, Linda, thanks for that call. Anne joins us now in Madison. Anne, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate what your guest says about if we don't raise the debt ceiling and default on our loans, how horrible that will be for our economy. But I feel like I've heard this multiple times. It seems like at least once or twice a year we hear that we're going to default on our loans. And I'm just wondering your guest's thoughts on how sustainable this is for us to continue to pass budgets at a deficit and then continue to raise the debt ceiling, and that without having some type of plan or problem solving in place to rectify that.
Thanks for the call. We're just about out of time. It's a great question for our last minute, Steve.
Well, I think it is crazy for us to have a debt limit. I'll be honest that I think what's critical is that we make smart spending and revenue or tax decisions. Once we make those spending and tax decisions, I think we're obligated then to cover the borrowing, if that's what they imply. We have a legal obligation, I think a moral obligation, and it only makes economic sense that we pay our bills. So the real question is how we can reform fiscal policy so that we're on a better long-term plan. And that's where politics comes in. But it's not mere politics. It's real differences about the role of government in American life. And the Democrats and Republicans are simply very far apart about those very priorities. And now we have one House of Congress controlled by the Republicans, the other one, and the White House controlled by the Democrats. We simply can't expect the two sides to easily agree.
And that's where we'll leave it. Thanks to our guest, Steve Smith from Washington University, looking at the latest standoff over the debt ceiling and whether Congress is going to raise it or not in the next few months.